Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of friends who are a little bit ashamed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Still NPRing it. Adam, this show has done a lot of embarrassing things to me, but I think the most embarrassing thing so far was I was showing my wife an article on the New York Times app on my iPad, and she asked why a Biff Yeager, a signed Biff Yeager trading card was being advertised in the little Amazon advertisement window in the article page. And I didn't have a very satisfying explanation.
For those of you who don't know, Biff Yeager plays Argyle in a few of the episodes in season one. Biff Yeager, of course, friend of the show. Biff Yeager, best actor name of all time. I don't think there's any argument there.
Yeah.
Argyle, one of the best minor characters of the show. I think we're in agreement on that as well.
Absolutely.
I am shocked that there was I'm not shocked that there was a trading card set. I think you and I have talked about what a mistake those are to buy at any age. But
I don't know. You sent me a couple of eBay links, which I think were probably the culprit for this becoming a thing that the internet algorithms think I'm interested in.
Yeah, a couple
and,
of episodes.
They had a complete set selling for like $1,500 or something.
Do you want to know how much a complete set of Star Trek cards was of the era when I told that story of when I was 10 years old and I went to the baseball card store and bought Star Trek cards instead? A complete set of those is like $11. It was basically the worst investment I could have ever made. And now the cards are so cool and sophisticated that they've got minor characters with autographs on them in these Star Trek card sets. Like the lady from episode 3 who got into that fight to the death with Tasha, who had that, that spiked poison bird glove. She's got a signed card. So it's not just like major bridge characters. Like they're really getting...
That is a deep cut.
Like, and Ito has a signed card. The Lady Ito with the perm. Yeah.
Now,
if you wanted an entire set of those autographed cards of minor characters, even that is like $800.
That is, I want to like dig through the crawl space at my parents' house and see if I have some pristine trading cards down there somewhere.
So your wife sees a picture of Argyle on your iPad and she's like, "Who's that?" Like, was she suspicious? Like, Argyle's a good looking man.
It says Star Trek trading card on there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it looked like a Tinder image or something.
Swipe right. This is season 1, episode 19, Heart of Glory. The Enterprise is detecting some set tripping in the neutral zone, and so they head in to investigate, and it's tense. It's like they pop into warp, they pop out, they have to broadcast to Starfleet that they're entering the neutral zone.
Yeah, it's our first time here, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the ship went to the neutral zone that time that Data had to take command while they were on planet Babelicious. But
and they're suspecting that the Ferengi might be involved, which is like, come on, guys.
Enough. Yeah, stop trying to work the fucking Ferengi into everything.
Yeah, it's not working.
Yeah, so they get into the neutral zone and they come upon a Talarian freighter that is all shot to shit and adrift in space. And this is some of my my favorite so far, like, alien spaceship cinematography.
Yeah.
Like, there's some great shots of this ship. It's a cool-looking ship. It looks like a freighter, like it's well designed for what it's supposed to be, and they beam aboard.
Hey, hey Ben.
Yeah.
How sure are you that we're getting, like, we're watching the remastered versions of the show? Like,
yeah.
And I agree, the exterior shots of the ships look amazing right now. Are we getting just redigitized ships, or are they actually changing shot compositions with our exteriors? Because
I'm with you.
Things look awesome, and yeah, it just seems unlikely they would look this awesome in the late 80s.
From what I understand, and this is very half remembered, and we are not trying to be the most journalistic Star Trek show on the podcast feed. So if you want that, you can go listen to that fucking mission log garbage.
Yeah, if you're a rodhead, go over there.
but from what I understand, they did not George Lucas this too much. They tried to be very faithful to the original, and you know, they're working from 35mm film clips that they cleaned up and re-telecined in HD. So I'm pretty sure that this is basically just a higher resolution of what it was in the original show. So they keep Yar on the bridge of the Enterprise because they don't know if Romulans are going to show up anytime, this being close to their space because it's the neutral zone. In fact, I think even Picard goes like, "Romulans, we haven't heard from them in some time," which is like, I think like 4 episodes ago, minimum.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're aware.
Yeah. But so Geordi, Data, and Riker beam over, and Geordi has a broadcast pack attached to his visor. So he's going to be FaceTiming the entire trip on the Talarian freighter. And so they get over there and they start broadcasting what Geordi's visor is getting to the main view screen on the bridge, and it's like the craziest like 1980s electronica music video you've ever seen. as a filmmaker, I'm just like, okay, so they did like set the hue to modulate at a certain speed. They did like a fine edges effect and duplicated the track and set that to multiply on the original track. And it's just real colorama situation.
Yeah, it really is. And what an interesting choice. You know, before the away team beams to the freighter, they all basically agree it's a trap. I think they actually say those words exactly.
Right.
But what better time is there to just experiment with a piece of equipment and see what Geordi's seeing, you know? So they really take their sweet-ass time over there.
Now I'm beginning to understand him.
I liked the sort of mystery of what Geordi's visual life is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure this like really nails what I had hoped it was in my imagination. But anyways, they poke around on this ship, and it's a really cool, like, busted up ship interior, like real bully job on the set design departments.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell they went to a hardware store. They got a bunch of gutter downspouts and that silver clothes dryer ducting.
Yeah, they got a lot of ducting.
Yeah, I mean, that shit is everywhere. It's great.
Yeah, it looks good. There's lots of like mist everywhere, and they explore and
We need to talk a little bit more about this because like it sounds like I'm being flip about the interior of the ship, but I'm really not. Like,
no, it's great.
The way it's shot is really cool too. They play with light a lot. Like they're backlighting a bunch of the rooms that the characters walk into, so the effect is real spooky and ominous. And
there's parts where like the mist kind of blows out light, so you can't really see past points because of all the smoke in the air. And
it's shot a little bit like a horror movie too, where characters are shading to the left or the right of frame before revealing where they're going. You know, that little horror film effect.
Yeah, and a genuinely tense scene. And what they come to find is a crew of three Klingons, one of whom is severely wounded. And as they find them, the reactor on the ship starts to go critical. There's a pretty tense moment where Yar runs down to the transporter room to try and beam them off the ship. And you sort of wonder if it was so important for her to be on the bridge before, why she's now in the transporter room when they have people who have the title transporter chief
right
on board the ship. But she is just barely able to get them off this ship before it goes ballistic.
Well, I mean, we see the ship explode.
Right.
And then a couple seconds later, we're going to expect like her to beam in a bunch of like wet red mist under the transporter pad. But luckily, she's able to capture them and bring them home.
Yeah, there's an abortive attempt where she runs the transporter and it can't quite get a lock. So it was real touch and go there.
Yeah. So one of the dudes they bring back is, there's three Klingons in total that they find on this cargo ship, and one of them's really badly hurt. So they bring him to the doctor, and they just sort of, the two healthy Klingons start explaining what the hell they were doing over there. And they say they were attacked by a Ferengi ship, and the Klingon, seeing that this cargo ship captain was just totally overmatched, they took over the cargo ship and used some of the cargo to fight them off. And so the story they're describing is super far-fetched. And when Picard presses him on more details, the sort of leader of the Klingons, what's the leader's name?
Chorus.
When Picard presses the leader of that group of Klingons, Chorus, about, you know, a little more details, he's like, oh, you know, I'm really tired and hungry. Maybe I should get something to eat first. Pretty classic.
Can me and my buddy go get our story straight, and then we'll come back and tell you about it?
Yeah, would have been a great time to have one Deanna Troi in the room for that kind of interrogation.
Yeah.
Deanna Troi completely absent from the entire episode.
Strange.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed watching this is I think that there's another group of three Klingons that shows up in DS9. I'm not sure if they're in Next Generation as well. Kang, Kodos, and Kor. And these guys are Chorus, Conmel, and Kunivas. What's up with three Ks? What's up with KKK being the normal group of three Klingons?
I don't know, Ben. I wish I could say I was surprised after episode 3, but how dare you?
Yeah, David Duke wrote this episode. Uncredited. He wasn't in the guild, so they had to give him a pen name.
This is one of those episodes where, you know, in the first couple of scenes where they come back from the open, that the entire screen is filled with writing credits. It's usually a bad sign.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures. You're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
As they're shown to their quarters, they find out that there's another Klingon on board, Lieutenant Worf, who introduces himself, and so they have a little bite to eat, a little bit of tea with Lieutenant Worf, and they're kind of fucking with him. They're like,
"Have they tamed you, or have you always been docile? Does it make you gentle? Has it filled your heart with peace?"
And he's like, "Why are you trying to big dog me? Like, I am just a chill dude trying to be a Klingon in a human world."
They really play up the contrast between them. Like, these quote unquote real Klingons are like covered in metal, and they have this big nappy Andrew WK hair, and Worf has got like his tight bob, and is like really like trim and put together, and his teeth are good. Like, what they shoot the Klingons really close up, and you get the idea that their teeth are just really jacked.
Yeah, they have bad teeth. So as they're finishing their meal, they get word from the sick bay that Kuni Vos is not long for this world. So they go down there to pay their respects. And this is maybe my favorite Worf moment in all of Star Trek, because as Kuni Vos shuffles loose this mortal coil, Worf and the two other surviving Klingons from the wreck start growling and then let out a crazy scream.
Yeah, and they do that thing where they cut to the high angle of the group. Like they're screaming at the camera. It's pretty great.
We go to the God perspective.
Yeah. we're made to understand that the reason they do this is to warn the heavens that a warrior is coming.
Right. Yeah, Data explains that this may not have ever been observed outside of the Klingon alliance, or whatever it's called. Klingon Empire? Empire.
So they're one of the Ks dies. And so we get a little more time between.
Which one do you think it was? Coup? Clan?
Yeah, definitely Klux. So the two remaining Klingons are palling around with Worf a little bit, and they sort of let it slip that that they might be outlaw Klingons. They're looking to live that cowboy lifestyle that they haven't found necessarily in Klingon culture since since this peace that the Federation and the Klingons have had for years. They're like, fuck peace, man. We want to be free, and we want to go out and kill and be the warriors that we know we can be. And Worf's not exactly down with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a...
They sort of explain that, yeah, dude, we took over the freighter. There was no Ferengi around. We wanted to take over the freighter and cruise to a place where we could be cowboys the way we want to be.
Yeah, this really draws on, like, some of the films from the original series cast. Like, Undiscovered Country is all about, like Klingons and humans that are too used to fighting with each other to feel comfortable living at peace with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess these guys are, decades later, kind of remnants of that situation. You know, the Klingon Empire is at peace with the Federation, but these guys are not down with peace. They're warriors.
That scene and the scene that follows is incredible to me. So basically, these two Klingons admit to being terrorist hijackers.
Right.
And then... A second later, they're like, hey, Worf, would you mind walking us around the ship? We'd like to see more of it. Worf's like, yeah, no problem.
Show us how the place works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Data, let's show your identical twin brother how to work your station at Ops, just so that he could assume your identity if he ever wanted to, say, take over the ship.
Real loose with the security there, Worf. Don't know how you're going to ever get a promotion acting like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, like, the fact that he doesn't immediately go report that to Commander Riker or something.
Well, he's not a snitch.
Yeah. Snitches get stitches on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
So the Enterprise detects a Klingon battlecruiser coming up on them pretty hot, and they get on the radio with this commander who demands that Corrus and Conmel be turned over because they're fugitives and criminals and, you know, I think at this point the bridge crew understands that they blew up a Klingon ship. And so Picard is like, get those guys in custody as quickly as possible. And they're like, oh, wow, they're actually walking down the hallway toward the battle bridge right now. And he sends Yar and, like, the Dustbuster Club down there to go round them up.
Yeah, there's, like, five security people, all with Dustbuster phasers. At the ready. Pretty threatening.
Yeah. And it's a weird scene because like Worf is sort of standing in between Corrus and Conmel and then the Dustbuster Club on the other side, and it's like sort of testing his loyalty. Like, is he gonna be loyal to these Klingons or is he gonna be loyal to his crewmates? And then a turbo lift opens and a little girl runs out and Corrus picks her up and Yar's like, hostage situation. And he's like, what? Chill out. And he hands the girl to Worf.
Yeah,
like,
Corrus basically speeds Tasha Yar, like, hostage situation. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Tasha doesn't have the nerve to shoot the hostage at that point.
Yeah, but she also calls in a hostage situation way before it's clear that that's what it is.
Basically, as soon as the turbo lift doors open, she calls the hostage situation.
Yeah, and Worf is like offended on like a racial level. He's like, we don't fucking do that, okay? That is an ugly stereotype, and we have worked very hard to get past that. Anyways, the Klingons are put in the brig, and no sooner are they in the brig than they start to assemble their secret uniform weapon.
Right, which is made out of, like, a boot tip, a belt buckle.
Two belt buckles get put together.
Yeah.
One of them has, like, I think in, like, the upper chest part of his uniform, he has a couple of tubes that are the barrels of this gun, and then the boot tips are the disruptor part that goes on the end of the barrel. It's real fun to watch him put this thing together.
Yeah, it's a total MacGruber job. And I think we can be confident that the Enterprise transporters are unable to detect anything dangerous at any time. They're constantly beaming people up with weapons or parts of weapons. They beamed up Jombie 5 episodes ago. They just don't really care.
Well, to his credit, Jombie just had a bunch of a bunch of titty beads on it in him. You know, he was, there was nothing to worry about with Jambi.
Them beads, though.
The beads. So Worf tells the captain that, like, the Klingons, if they take these guys, are just going to go execute them, and that Picard should reconsider just handing these guys over. But, you know, Picard's in a tight spot. Worf gets on the blower with Kanara, the Klingon commander on the other ship, and pleads to let them take exile on a hostile planet rather than execution, because I guess the Klingon honor logic is that if they're executed, then it dishonors all Klingons. But if they can die on their feet like men, then their honorable deaths will be, you know, good enough for them and good enough for everybody else. But Kanara, you know, he's got his orders. As much as he agrees on a personal level with Worf.
Yeah, he's a company man.
He's a company man. So as this is going on, Corrus and Conmel bounce from the brig. I think Conmel gets wasted pretty quickly.
Yeah, they trade Conmel for the security guy outside the door. Two people die, like, immediately.
Yeah, I was a little confused by that because I felt like the animation of the phaser blasts looks like what it usually looks like when it's on stun mode. It's mm-hmm. like the kind of ripple effect. And usually, like, on kill mode, it either, like, physically wounds somebody, like, you know, like, lights their clothes on fire, or they totally vaporize. And it wasn't that with either of these, but yeah.
I thought it was weird. Like, Corrus and Conmel are out, and the firefight happens. Conmel gets killed. The security chief gets killed. And Corrus just bounces. Corrus doesn't stop to open up Conmel's eyes and give the yell. Even a quick yell, I think, would have been appropriate at that point. Yeah. Why not? Like, he had the time. He had the time. And I think we can assume from this scene that maybe they weren't as close as we thought.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of... I mean, you worry for the dead that they're not going to get any warning that this warrior is on his way.
Could you imagine the dead are just chilling out?
Yeah.
Just
fucking Conmel shows up and starts cutting people's heads off with a batleth or whatever.
Yeah, a little warning would have been nice.
Heads up next time, thanks guys.
Yeah, so Corrus makes a beeline to engineering with his little with his improvised weapon, and basically gets up to the second deck of the warp core and aims his weapon at the warp core, sort of taking the ship hostage.
Yeah, at the dilithium chamber. Yeah. Yeah, if a disruptor hits the dilithium chamber, it's going to take the whole ship out and him along with it. And Worf has to kind of explain this to the captain. Like, he is not looking to be taken alive at this point. Like, it's either going to be he, like, kills everybody on board the ship and takes off with the ship, or he takes the ship out, killing 1,000 people to prove his point. So Worf goes up there and tries to reason with Corrus. And this is kind of an interesting discussion about, like, the kind of the way they define honor and the way they define themselves as warriors. You know, we learned last episode that Worf's enemy is the reliance he has in being a member of Starfleet on other people to keep him alive. Like Starfleet's all about people working together to... for the greater good, and that's a real hard road for him to hoe, and that's the enemy he battles every day. That would not be satisfactory to Corrus. Yeah. So Worf is like, and this made me really respect Worf, you know. Worf is like a man with a very profound internal struggle, and he doesn't have any shame about that. He's like, yo, this is what I deal with. This is, like, the way I have to live my life. And I'm not ashamed of it. I, like, this is the life I want to live, and I just have this struggle. That's part of it, and he feels very confident in that, giving him the qualifications of being a real Klingon warrior. And Corrus is like, the only way he can really define it is by going out and being a conquering murder zealot or whatever. So he's not going to be talked down by Worf.
Yeah, it's a real like angel devil argument, right?
Totally. And how does this work out? He like lunges at Worf and Worf shoots him? Or does Worf just
no, Worf takes a little no, he doesn't take an elevator. Worf climbs the ladder up to his level.
Yeah.
They both have this discussion. And then Worf just straight up shoots him.
Pretty badass. It's like Han shooting first, you know?
Yeah, and then Chorus fall. They make these decks in engineering out of glass, and it's not tempered, yeah. Which is kind of a
mistake. I would have thought it would be clear aluminum like they have in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Yeah, but, so Chorus is basically the guy at the party who falls through the glass coffee table.
Yeah.
So he falls through one of the decks and then lands on a deck below and cracks that one. So
huge party foul. I mean, it's party foul on top of party foul.
I don't know how many of these glass decks there are, but...
Right, because the warp core is pretty tall, right? It's at least several stories tall.
I think you could conceive of a situation where he could have fallen through like 8 of these glass coffee tables.
He is the body equivalent of the alien blood in Alien,
yeah.
Going through the deck plating, just one floor after another.
Yeah.
Oh, how fun would it have been to see them have to like run down the stairs, keep chasing him as he goes.
Yeah, I mean, as it was, the cleanup is substantial, but not as bad as it could have been. I mean, this is a one shop vac job, I think, getting all this glass cleaned up. And then Worf does that thing. He opens up his eyes with his fingers. He does maybe the best scream of all because they do that intercut thing where
they
shoot him close
progressively
and then they
further
cut
away.
Wide and then they cut wider and then they cut super wide. Sort of like I don't know where you've seen this effect before, like probably Hitchcock movies where someone gets murdered in a house and they cut to the exterior and birds take flight from a tree.
If this had been shot in the irony-soaked 2000s, it would have cut to the outside of the ship and then the galaxy and then the universe, and you'd still hear him screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty epic. So Worf has more respect for Chorus than Chorus has for Conmel.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, and you wonder, like, does Worf at some point, like, go pay that respect to Conmel and they just don't show it? Unclear.
They refer to this a couple of different ways. Like, as soon as a Klingon dies, they ask what to do with the body. A few different people are asked. Originally, they ask Chorus what to do with the first guy's body, and Chorus is like, well, he's basically a piece of garbage right now if a warrior soul doesn't inhabit him, so treat him like nothing. And then the same goes for Chorus's body. They ask Worf what they're going to do with him, and he's like, I don't fucking care. Like,
yeah,
throw him in the compactor.
Yeah. Yeah, put him in the replicator and make some cutlets out of it. So they get on, they get back up to the bridge, and Picard has an awkward phone call to make to Kanhera, the commander of the ship that's come to collect these two ass wipes. And he's like, hey, you know those guys that you came to get? They actually got out of our brig, and, well, we had to kill them.
So, funny thing about those prisoners we were planning to send you.
Yeah. So, Kanara's like, can I talk to the Klingon guy that you had on board before? And Worf comes down and into the lower portion of the bridge, and Kanara asks him how the fugitives died, and Worf says, they died well. And Kanara's like, cool, you're a good dude. You can come work on my ship any day of the week. And Worf's like, all right, that sounds pretty good. Once my term of service is up here. And when they cut off communication, he's like, I don't want to work for that asshole. I was just being polite.
Yeah, and that's the button on the episode. Like, yeah. Like Worf being polite to another Klingon and then going back to his science station.
They all laugh and they freeze frame and then the credits roll.
My love is a fever.
For all of the things in this episode that weren't perfect, I think this might be my favorite episode so far. I thought it was great. Like all of the stuff with the ship at the beginning was great. Super yeah. well done. Great suspense, like interesting conflict. I love Worf episodes generally.
You get some shoot 'em ups.
There's good action, like, and overall, like, you know, plausible tension and fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I don't agree that it was the best episode of the season. I don't know what episode I would give that award to. Yeah, the only thing to me that didn't make sense was Troy's absence, her unexplained absence, and her real utility. Like she was needed in an episode like this, but without her, I think they just allow these terrorists to run roughshod over the ship.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dug it. It was fun. I mean, the Klingons were really cool looking. They walk around like cowboys. Like they make a sound like they've got spurs hanging off of them. Right. They're really loud walkers.
Their legs wide apart.
Yeah, they're really cool. The contrast between them and Worf could not be more pronounced. They really dial that up in a fun way.
Yeah, but like well characterized. Like you can see the part of Worf that is in them and vice versa.
Yeah.
And you can see like what he has had to do to adapt to the environment that he serves in.
Yeah, I mean this is one of the better character development episodes that you get in this show. Yeah. Because I think so often you get sort of a Dullesville character episode where, you know, Picard's going to go explore the holodeck and you're going to learn more about him. Like it's not, the stakes aren't as high in an episode like that, but there seem like real stakes here, which were great. So good job, guys. Good job. Good job, Rob Bauman. I took a tour of the internet a little bit to figure out his deal because I kept seeing his director credit on episodes in the first season. Yeah. And I was blown away. Do you know anything about him?
No. Is he related to Chris Bauman?
I don't know. We will have to. I don't know who that is. that's a joke. We love Chris Bauman, friend of the show, Chris Bauman.
He's the co-host of my other podcast, Let's Drink About It, which I'm not ashamed that much.
Yeah, that show is fantastic. Anyway, Rob Bauman was 27 years old when he started directing Star Trek episodes.
Oh my God, I'm jealous forever.
Doesn't that make you feel like a huge asshole?
Yeah.
God, I'm 36 and I am making a Star Trek podcast. That's that's how shitty I feel.
Yeah.
This is one of 5 episodes he directed in season 1, and he went on to direct 12 episodes in the series. He directed at 27 years old, 5 episodes in this season. That's amazing to me. I just thought that was awesome trivia.
I thought that the camera work and you know, blocking and everything in this was great. I mean, I think you did a good job with it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Good work, Rob. Good job.
Nice one.
Hey, Ben, do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
You know, I didn't really come up with one for this episode. The only thing I could really think of was there's this moment when they're on the Talarian ship at the beginning when Data's like, I should go through there because it's like really hot and radioactive in there and it's not mm-hmm. going to affect me that much. And he comes back and he's like, yeah, it's through here. Come on, guys. So Data was my only like nominee, but I didn't really feel like it was that great of a drunk Shimoda moment to warrant a full-blown award.
Data being the guy at the party that jumps off the deck and is like, hey, that wasn't that bad, guys. Guys, you should try that. That was super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. My drunk Shimoda is Chorus, and it's all about that scene where he left his homie in the hallway without giving him a little scream. That sounds pretty whack. That sounds like classic drunk guy behavior where, you know, bro meets a girl at a party and then just jets and doesn't tell anyone.
Yeah,
like,
totally ghosts on all his friends.
Yeah, yeah, that was a pretty... Yeah, I mean, you could say Conmel literally ghosted at that moment, but... But Chorus doesn't give him the decency of a yell, even a little one. So for that reason, Chorus is my Shimoda for this episode. Bad form, Chorus.
Weak sauce.
He got what he deserved, though.
Yeah. He got what was coming to him. An honorable death.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There
What do we have coming up next on our next exciting episode of both Star Trek The Next Generation and our podcast?
The next episode is The Arsenal of Freedom. Picard and the away team fight for their lives on a planet run by a computerized weapon system. What do you remember about this episode, Adam?
This is one of the most memorable episodes to me, I think, of the whole series. Echo Papa 607.
Yeah. I remember this episode very well. What's that smarmy actor name? That, like, he's one of those that guys.
Yeah, yeah, he's sort of like a Tony Shalhoub type.
Yeah, he's like if Tony Shalhoub had never stopped smoking cigarettes and was like 55 years old.
Yeah, I'm totally excited to see this episode. Like all of them, I haven't seen since they first came out. So, I'm excited to see if it holds up.
Yeah, what does the reception look like?
They described this actor we're talking about is Vincent Schiavelli, who, of course, it's Vincent Schiavelli. They say he totally owns every scene he's in.
Yeah, I bet.
Which is how I remember it too. The guy's awesome. A fun, enjoyable, diverting episode is what it's been called. So, yeah.
Ooh. Things are looking up for The Greatest Generation.
Yeah, they're really building it up. Like we've said a few times before, I don't know what we're going to do with this podcast once the shows get good.
Yeah, just have to shut it down.
I guess we'll find out together. If anyone wants to reach out to us and tell us what they think of the show or of us, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Cut for Time. Ben is at Benjamin R, A-H-R. That's how you spell the R part of that.
Yeah, and we have an email address, drunkshimoda@gmail.com. Send us a note. It's awesome when people review the show on iTunes with 5 stars. That's really, you know, I think that we've really kind of gone through the looking glass on the embarrassment factor, and now we're just trying to get as many listeners as we can.
Yeah, now it feels like therapy. It feels less embarrassing and more therapeutic.
We're leaning into it. So to get more listeners, something like 70% of all podcast listens happen on iTunes. So that's where most people find shows. And if you go to iTunes and rate and review the show, that helps us stay on the charts and get in front of people's eyeballs. And it's a big help.
Yeah, and it also pushes down those guys who leave 1- and 2-star reviews because they think we've got a filthy... filthy, crazy podcast that's totally ripping on a show and a childhood that they thought that they loved. Like, we don't need those people. 5-star review, 1 sentence. That's all we need. That's not too much to ask.
No.
All right. Well, after making that solicitation to our tens of viewers, I guess we should wrap this one up. We'll see you next week with another exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, hosted by two guys who are growing less and less ashamed of reviewing them. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
See you next time. Make it so.